No one is unaffected by houselessness in Hawaii. There's a panel coming up this weekend that could help those in Honolulu to understand the issues a little bit better. It's called Home Free, Aloha in Art, a panel at Honolulu Museum's Doris Duke Theater, Saturday, tomorrow, 1 p.m. One of the organizers is Josiah Coria, CEO of Tyrell's Angels and also CEO of Pu'uhonua Trade Masters. Well, gee, Josiah, I'm so glad to get to talk with you because how long have you been working out there at Pu'uhonua?
Since 2012, I've been working with them.
Uh-huh. I can tell that you've assessed a situation and strategically decided where to put your energy, Josiah. And it's so cool because through Terrell's Angels, you're putting it toward youth. Through Pu'uhonua Trade Masters, you're putting it to job readiness.
Yes.
Tell me about what's needed in these areas now.
Yes, I'd say definitely a lot more training. You know, these guys, we get a lot of donations, you know, especially with clothing, with food. You know, but it's not really helping them in the long term process. For them to be more self-sustaining, you know, we need to get better at training them in different types of life skills, you know, resume building, work ethics, you know, personality, getting along with other people, you know, different areas, skills, and education to expose them to more different things in life so that they're not stuck in this way for the rest of their lives.
Oh, wow. So how can we start providing that?
You know, a lot of people are really excited at first to hire homeless people or houseless people. So, you know, I created this job so that I can give them this opportunity and also the job experience so that in the future when they try to get better careers that they have this time where they can write job experience on their resumes.
Do you need mentors? Who are these people who can help, you know, bring this along here?
Yes, definitely anybody who has a type of skill that we could that could be taught to these people, you know, even with resumes or I've been partnering up with different organizations, but even just other employers who want to do like little field trips, internships, you know, even these guys are willing to work for free at times, you know, they just need that job experience and volunteer hours to show the proof, you know, that they're willing to work. The biggest thing for them is just the consistency. Yeah, because a lot of people come over there and a lot of different organizations just come for a day. You know, they say that they're going to help them in these areas, but it's not too often when they come back. You know, we get a lot of help during the Christmas times, especially, you know, the holidays. There's been so many people coming in and out that they kind of have trust issues at a point, you know, because you know, it's hard to really know if people are going to continue to come back or not, you know.
How are things feeling out there?
Oh, it feels really good. Like, honestly, I always tell people, you know, especially my mom, who's always scolding me for not going to church. You know, I'm always like, Mom, this is my church. You know, it's kind of like a spiritual place for me to really, you know, do God's work and really help people out the best way I can. You know, I love being there. Like, I sleep there most of the week. I still have my own house. But I feel more comfortable sleeping over there with them, you know, more connected with them to show that, you know, I'm willing to be one of them and help them from that point of view, you know, and it's just really comforting to be there around those humbling people. I feel like they teach me a lot.
Thank you so much, Josiah. I really appreciate talking with you.
Oh, yeah, of course. Thank you.
It's Josiah Coria. He's chooses to live out there at the Pu'uhonua o Waianae, there at Waianae Boat Harbor. He's the CEO of Terrell's Angels. Now, he's one of the panelists tomorrow at the Honolulu Museum's Doris Duke Theater. Another of the panelists is the leader of Pu'uhonua o Waianae, Twinkle Borge. You know, help me, Twinkle, get a grip here just by using the right words, okay? Houseless works better for you than homeless?
Yes.
Is that the best?
Yes. I prefer using houseless instead of homeless. Even when I go out, I scare. I usually let them know houseless.
Help us to use the words that you know, just leave some of those old ideas behind. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I remember this first guy I did an interview with, and he was like, what the hell is this? This is not a homeless encampment. And I said, hey, why you got to talk about us like that? And I said, first of all, we're houseless in our own homes, you know? I said, and just try to live. You know, not all of us make that income to get into one place or anything. So what we do have, we turn it around.
Help, you know, people have seen some videos and so on, but you tell me, Twinkle, describe where you live. Take me through a little bit.
I believe we live in one village. You know, here we do have meetings here every month, just to keep everybody on top of things and what is going on. And our homes, I believe they should build it according to how they want it, to give them that little peace of mind in them. Our village, you can walk through our village, everybody knows everyone. You know, and if someone is in distress, everyone will come out to help. That's how it should be. Especially for our kids here, they are like our number one priorities. You know, for schooling, for Josiah setting up mentors for them to help. Just in case we're missing anything else, we do secure our village so at least the people feel that little bit safer. Because it can get crazy out here, you know.
Is it safe there in the village?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. The city has been doing a lot of sweeps in our area. So we do recognize a lot of unfamiliar faces. We do try to see how we can help them, or if we can bring in an agency to help them. The only thing that breaks my heart is when I see new kids coming in.
Oh, and what happened? Where do they go?
Usually we will help them build up the areas. If not, I will bring an agency in to help them get into shelter, you know, to see how if they wouldn't mind doing that, trying to help them get back on their feet and whatnot. So, yeah.
What are the basics for building their area?
The basics, usually, like wine I store, they have pallets on the outside, free for everyone to take. So we would usually take the pallets. Josiah's dad, he usually brings rugs, so we'll build the foundation out and help them out. We do have people that also donate tents. You know, we'll just build everything from pallets to make our walls and makeshift a home.
Mm-hmm. And you're having an open house?
Yes, on November 3rd. Open for the public to come in and see. We are also trying to bring in one of our homes. A prototype of what can become. So hopefully the guy that we are working with, Cliff, that he is able to trailer out a home for us. So at least we can give the people a vision of what can be. You know, what full home can come to and what can come to life. You know, I believe so much that the people deserve a lot. You know, but first of all, we got to help them recognize what is going on with them besides besides us. Like for me, I'm houseless by choice. I do have a home. I've been out here since 2003. Even when I do go home, you know, my brothers and my sisters, they would tell me come in the house, and man, I would just laugh because I am more comfortable outside than being in a home.
Mm-hmm. Do most of the people there at Pu'uhonua or Waianae feel that way?
Some maybe need a little bit more help, a little bit more push, you know, to get them back on the street. To get back into working, get them back into school. We have helped a lot of our young adults to get back into school, get their GEDs. Usually I find one sponsor for them to help pay for their books and whatnot and get them back going, you know. Whatever that happened in their life, I just want them to know that we can push forward. You know, you don't need to stay bottom.
So you're saying If that life suits me, I could. It's been there for so long already, the village.
Yeah.
I mean, you've had kids grow up. They successfully can go to school. They graduate. And then you're saying they can start a working life.
They went into college. They got a better life. And most of them is working now. That the students that did come from here, about maybe 2-3 years ago, we did have a summa cum laude that came out from here.
Really?
You know, and... even for my kids, even the ones that we take care of here, if they come home with 1D, it's like we all failed, you know? But I have high expectations for our kids. They come home with more than just a 3.5 average. They come home with higher average than that GPA average. So I'm proud of them. You know, if they need any help or anything, we will always be there to assist. we'll always bring people in if they're failing. Throughout all the years that I have been here, maybe 200 plus, we got into homes, got back into jobs. You know, so as they leave, someone's coming right in, taking their spot.
How many do you have there now?
Right now, honestly, about almost 260, 270.
Growing?
Growing.
You're saying that you you have some designs for shelters that you like, that could be built there?
I know the state would never let us build here, but I don't know. To me, I think maybe we got to just show it, you know, that it can work.
How are discussions going for another location?
We're still in negotiation of that. There is a couple of sites that we are looking at. I have another group that is helping me with that, Hui Aloha. They focus on that. I focus on the people.
Mm-hmm. The open house. I mean, I can't wait. I mean, it's so nice of you folks to offer that.
Thank you. You're more than welcome to come even before the open house. I never do have a closed door policy. I'll invite anyone and everyone in, you know, just hoping and believing that they have a better understanding. When I first became houseless, you know, I met a family who was here 16 years that lived out in KLs, and throughout that whole 16 years, they had the kids there, and I was like, wow. I never thought houseless community was actually this big. I mean, I was born and raised in town, so I hardly seen that around us until I moved out to the leeward side.
We're going to keep learning. We're going to keep learning from you about this. I guess the first way, a good way to start, is just head out there November 3rd.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
See you out there at your place.
Yes.
Mahalo.
Mahalo. Have a beautiful day.
Twinkle mentioned a volunteer group she's working with. Excuse me. Hui Aloha. James Kushipa volunteers with Hui Aloha. He's been developing friends in houseless communities since back in 2015. There's a panel coming up.
Mm-hmm.
You've got representatives from some of these far-flung encampments represented on the panel. What's the idea here?
I think the idea is just to offer people a way to learn about houselessness and the experiences of houseless people and some different solutions that may not come from what you read in the paper or see on the news about homelessness and housing. I guess one of my big takeaways from the time I spent on the street is that there's so much that the quote-unquote average person, there's no way we would know about the experiences of being homeless or things like why people don't go to the shelters after a sweep. There's also a lot of positive news about the work people are doing to try to build community on the street, and not just within camps, but between camps and people around camps, housed neighbors, businesses in the area. That's part of what I think we'll explore.
Are these encampments connected?
They're starting to be. And they're starting to be really primarily because of the work of Twinkle Borge and others at Puhonua Owainai to reach out to other houseless camps.
Well, the holidays are coming up, James.
Mm-hmm.
People are going to be wondering what they can do.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, when people find out that I have been doing this work for a few years, they'll often ask me, "Well, what's the solution?" And I've started to sort of rethink that myself a little bit. You know, I think we might need to reframe the problem a little bit in terms of, number one, just affordability, and how do we create a situation where people can actually afford to live in Hawaii?
How do we start to do that?
Well, I think we got to talk about it as a community, honestly. I feel like when we say affordable housing, we have in our minds a certain type of housing for a certain subpopulation of people. And really the root issue we need to grapple with as a community is we have a cost of living and a cost of housing that has been moving out of reach for most working people in Hawaii for the past 15 years. And what do we do about that? We've had conversations about affordable housing and homelessness, but we haven't had a community conversation about that. I guess the second thing is on the reframing is clothes, food, all those things, volunteering, they all matter. But the one step I would encourage each of us to take that's a little bit further and maybe a little bit different is try to connect with someone person to person. You know, try to meet somebody on the street. And you don't have to be best friends or swap life stories, but acknowledge them as a human being. And if a conversation starts, be open to the conversation. I mean, you know, I've been doing this for a few years now, and a group of volunteers has been doing it with me. And we don't have any program to offer. We don't have any services to offer.
Well, how do you strike up a conversation?
We go out with a coffee traveler and, you know, a box of malasadas or Spanish rolls, and we just go tent to tent and offer people coffee. And I know from having spent some time on the street that hot coffee in the morning is a real luxury. And people are excited to have a cup of coffee, and they want to sit and talk story. And honestly, you know, I've asked people on the street, one of the questions I ask people on the street regularly is, you know, what do you need? What is the solution? You know, from your perspective, what is the solution? What are the needs here? And the response I get most often is, we just want to be treated like human beings, you know? And it's great that someone is out here just talking to me like a person versus driving by and staring or glaring or shouting things out the window at me or walking past and ignoring me. You know, it may sound like a small thing, but I think it reframes the problem really as we got to get back to building community. You know, we're so separated from each other right now that these big issues, we're never going to tackle them unless we can talk to each other. You know,
it hurts to ignore it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Geez, thanks so much, James.
Oh, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Houseless leaders speak tomorrow on a panel at the Doris Duke Theater, 1 p.m., and all are invited to visit the open house at Pu'uhonua Owai'anae next Saturday, November 3rd, between 10 and 2. Find out more on the conversation page, okay? And now for a fine close to this segment about our community here in the 50th state. Let's enjoy what thousands across the world have been savoring all week. From the ball field at UH Manoa, Willie Kay delivered the national anthem.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributors PCAT, Pacific Center for Advanced Technology Training, Moyer Financial, and Kaiser Permanente.
This is The Conversation on statewide member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. Coming up, your Aloha Friday quiz.
Unihua, ulehua, unihau, ukaua, uahu, umulokai, ulanai, umau, ukahoolave, uhawaii.
What's in a name? Well, for Hawaii historians, the surname Lycurgus, believe it or not, brings to mind Uncle George, the Greek-American businessman who helped pioneer the visitor industry here. He's credited for starting one of the first business beach resorts. In 1893, he bought a small guest house on Waikiki Beach. He expanded it and called it Sanssouci. He later bought and managed a volcano house on Hawaii Island. Members of the Hawaiian royal family were regular guests at his establishments. But it wasn't the sun and surf that first brought Uncle George to these island shores. It was the wholesale fruit trading business. For today's quiz, can you name the enterprise that he helped form in 1892 to pack and ship pineapples? Call 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you know the answer. The first one who gets it right will get our reusable tote bag that tells people that you got it right.
Support for The Conversation comes from Matson, in appreciation of HPR's local public affairs programming. Since 1882, working to support Hawaii's economy and communities. Matson.com.
Great to have you here, Wayne Yoshioka, our political reporter at HPR.
Good morning, Noe.
Uh-huh. Well, Wayne, there's been a lot of talk on the national scene about voter registration changes, changes people might not even notice till they get to the polls and try to vote. I mean, is anything like that in store here?
Well, the only thing they have is a same-day registration, and you can vote on the same day. You just walk to the polls on November 6th, register, and cast your ballot.
All right. I need to have an ID for that. Anything else?
Correct. Just an ID.
All right. Now, it actually does sound like it's getting easier for us to vote here in these islands.
Can't be easier.
Yeah. Okay. Unless by mail, right?
Correct. I mean, here we are 11 days to the November 6th general election. And one of the top races, Governor David Ige running for re-election, and his lieutenant governor running mate, Josh Green, the state senator and the Big Island emergency room doctor, they have a big advantage this time. There were 250,000 Democrats that voted during the primary election.
Okay.
An 8-to-1 margin over Republicans. So the Republican gubernatorial candidate Andrea Tupola and her running mate Marissa Kearns have a real big uphill battle.
Do you think they made about the best showing for Republicans in the gubernatorial race in quite a while?
Well, we shall see, because they're virtually unknowns on the neighbor islands, which is big disadvantage, because you can't win a statewide race without the big, you know, the neighbor islands. So
true.
We'll see.
They did seem more visible this time around.
Yeah, and they did a great showing, I think. But, you know, really, it really comes down to voter turnout, because the lower the turnout, the bigger advantage you have for the incumbents. So
that's
one of the things.
And speaking of the neighbor islands, how are we looking there? Say, Kauai, or where do you want to start?
Well, we have some great executive races on Maui County. We have that race for mayor, Michael Victorino, who is a 1971 St. Joseph's School graduate from the Big Island, and also the father of Shane Victorino, the baseball player. He's been a council member. He termed out after 8 years, and he has a commanding lead, 39% of the votes, over Ellie Cochran, who's been a council member since 2011. So I think that race is almost a foregone conclusion. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Also, the Kauai County Mayor's race, that's also looks like it's almost settled.
Really?
Derek Kawakami, a state representative for 2 terms and a council member for 5 years.
Yeah.
He has a 46% advantage, 24% over the nearest competitor, which is Mel Raposo, the council member who served for 12 years as a Kauai policeman. So I think those two races are almost done.
Not familiar with Kawakami. What do you know about him, Wayne?
Well, he comes from a political family. He had his aunt who was a representative here on Oahu. Chaired the Kauai Island Utility Cooperative for 2 years.
Oh, really?
So he's really been involved, and he's being a council member for 5 years, he's had that name recognition.
Is he seen kind of as the young, up-and-coming, sort of a new face?
I don't think so. He's he's pretty seasoned, and he's a great guy to know. He's always laughing, smiling, and if you want to be a politician, that's a good quality to have.
Does he sing karaoke?
No. We also have some great Maui County races. They have 4 seats there, and we have some well-known names like Alan Arakawa, the former mayor.
Really?
And we have Rollins Fernandez. Remember Fernandez Sauling from the Kauai? She used to be on
sure.
That's a great name. That's a council member from Molokai. Keani Rollins Fernandez is running for that seat. So, you know, some well-known names. Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens to the Maui County Council.
Interesting. What's happening up at Big Island?
The Big Island, we have a lot of returning people, so it's not really going to be a real shakeup there. We have Valerie Poindexter, who's the chair, and she's returning to her Hamakua seat. We have Aaron Chung, who's also returning. He's from South Hilo. Susan Lee Loy from South Hilo and Keaau, she's returning. And we have a new one, Ashley Kirkowitz, who's a newcomer, and she won over Eileen O'Hara, who was
really?
The incumbent. So we'll see a new face there. And we'll also see a new face in Rebecca Villegas, who is from South Kona and North Kona, and she's going for the seat left vacant by Drew Kanuha, who also ran for the mayor's seat.
Right.
So it should be, it's not a big shakeup, but at least it's new faces.
Thanks for the bit of a rundown there. On Oahu, Wayne, what are you looking at? What are you looking most closely at?
I think it's the race on District 4 for the Honolulu City Council between Trevor Ozawa and Tommy Waters. It's a rematch. Trevor Ozawa won the 2012 race by 47 small little votes. So it's going to be a interesting race to follow.
It really will be. Do you think the mayor was kind of weighing in on it a little bit with his port luck?
I think so. He's a good friend of Tommy Waters. He supported him during the House when Caldwell was the House Majority Leader and Tommy Waters was an up-and-coming representative, and they really struck it off. They're both attorneys, so they have something in common.
Interesting. Well, geez, thanks so much, Wayne. What's going to be happening for coverage on that election day?
I guess we're going to be, Bill Dorman and I, our news director and vice president, we're going to be doing some play-by-play on the election, so we'll see how that goes.
That always works so well for those of us who have to be driving around, particularly at that time. Thank you so much, Wayne.
Thank you, Noe.
That was HPR's political reporter, Wayne Yoshioka, and you can find his full reports online at hawaiipublicradio.org. Time for the reality check with Honolulu Civil Beat's Marcel Honoré. Marcel, hello. Hi there.
Hey, Noe. Hi. Happy Aloha Friday.
Same to you. I haven't been seeing any glitzy ads about the Hart Board Charter Amendment.
Yeah.
Can you brief us on that?
This one's been flying kind of under the radar. It's the lone Honolulu City Charter Amendment proposal. And the language is a little convoluted. It has to do with rail. But basically what it boils down to is currently there are 9 voting members on the HART board. But for any action to pass, they need a total of 8 yes votes at least. And that is because late last year, the total membership on the board expanded from 10 members, because there was one non-voting member, to 14 members. And the 4 new members don't vote as well. So under this new quorum with 14 members, the majority votes need to match they need to reflect that new quorum. So you need a lot of yes votes if you're able to kind of follow that bouncing ball there.
You'd it's think been this a, could have been averted with some other kind of verbiage somewhere, but...
Yeah, it's kind of hard to explain. I know the mayor's been a little nervous. We were discussing this the other day, that, you know, people aren't really familiar with it. They might even confuse it with the now invalid Con Am proposal, and or even the Con, which isn't really polling that well.
So the ballot question asks, in simple terms, Marcel, what?
It's basically asking to allow for a majority of the voting members to have a measure on rail to pass instead of the total members, so that you can get a more simple majority and what they would say, you know, better governance for the board.
Have there been objections? What are the cons to this proposal?
Yeah, there's not a lot out there. The cons that I've heard is another part of this, interestingly, is they want to add another voting member to make it 10 voting members. And that would make it an even amount of voting members instead of odd, you know, and you typically go for odd numbers in these kinds of boards and these kinds of votes. But really, if you've been following HART for years historically, you know, it's pretty rare. I can't even think of a time when they've had, you know, like a really contentious vote that was almost split down the middle. So the odds of that are pretty rare.
I see. Geez, I don't know. What do you say to people who ask you, what should I do on this amendment?
Well, I don't know. I'd kind of refrain from telling people how to vote. I just want to make sure that people understand kind of what is at stake. It really does seem to be kind of a house cleaning measure, and it's caused some issues with the board on some pretty key actions in the past, and it could cause some issues with some of these FTA requirements that are before them in the next couple of weeks. So
I know really it could cause even more issues once we say yes, if we do. Well, geez, thanks, Marcel, for laying it out here.
Thanks, Noe.
Really appreciate it. And we'll take another look at this issue with the chair of the HART board next week, right here on The Conversation. You'll get more of this scoop. But to read the story that Marcel wrote, visit civilbeat.org.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Hanahaoli School, celebrating its 100-year anniversary. Information on the 2019-2020 application process for junior kindergarten through sixth grade is now available at hanahaoli.org.
Of that. Sound Print is presented by Honolulu Printmakers, and it considers the relationship between sound and print. And this whole idea seeks to position print culture as a vehicle for intermedia exchange. Now, it all really is part of the Honolulu Printmakers' plan to conquer the earth. It's a plan that Duncan Dempster is the head of right now. Honolulu-based artist and teacher. He's the executive director of Honolulu Printmakers. Hey, welcome, Duncan.
Oh, thank you.
Glad to have you here.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Glad to participate in this exercise of world domination you guys are into, because it's so fascinating.
Yeah, let's back up the world domination a little bit.
Nathaniel Russell's here. He's a visiting artist and musician, lives in Indiana, roots in San Francisco, and he's in town now for workshops and to kind of make that sound and print connection. Thanks for being here, Nat.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, you know, this is all in advance of the 2018 Honolulu Print and Book Fair that's coming up November 2nd and 3rd. Nat, you're a printmaker. You've done posters, album covers, murals the size of buildings. You know, how would you describe your work?
Well, I do a lot of different kind of things. It's very representational. I draw a lot of people and hands and plants and animals.
Uh-huh.
Familiar things.
They're kind of intimate feeling. Naive, maybe.
I don't know if I can be like willfully naive. I wish, but I'm definitely inspired by keeping things simple and I guess primitive.
And so what's cool is we got a little taste of your aesthetic through the sound file at the beginning of this segment. And so we have a little taste of that. It was neat to think about that. How would you describe that connection between sound and print?
Well, I see printmaking and music in a practical way really, really similar. If you record music or you're making a print, you have to think of things in layers, what goes on first and how different colors or notes relate to one another in a practical way. And in they both also have this magical element of happy accidents, things you couldn't plan on. as you strum a wrong note, maybe that's the right note. And maybe one color overlaps in a way that you never could have planned for or tried to, but that makes all the difference.
And that happens even to experienced printmakers.
Yeah. I hope so, if we're doing it right.
Yeah. Uh-huh. You know, I know you're starting some workshops. We won't go into it, but, you know, what would be a first project that you would assign someone?
Well, I think it's good just to loosen up and connect mm-hmm. with everyone in the class and so that we all feel like we're in a big family on this adventure together. So I like to start things off with just a loosening up drawing exercise, force people to get out of their comfort zone and make some art right here and right now and see what flows.
Sounds dangerous, Duncan.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
Well, at least, I know you folks are used to possibly making a mess at times.
Yeah.
And then, but you know, printmaking is also so exacting. I mean, I just love the people who are involved in printmaking.
Well, it can be exacting or it can be really loose and spontaneous.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's one thing that they're going to explore in Nat's workshop extensively based on what he's been saying.
Right.
You know, how to kind of loosen up a little bit and be more exploratory and more spontaneous.
You know, that's one angle of printmaking I see you really working, because, you know, printmaking has always been in people's minds as one thing, a sheet of paper with something on it, and you're really breaking down those barriers.
Well, yeah, I guess we're always trying to activate the studio and, you know, what can kind of go on in the studio. So that's one reason behind this SoundPrint series is to kind of think about what else you can do in a print studio. We sort of know the straightforward activities and uses of the print studio, and I'm kind of interested in what else can happen there and how it can influence different modes of making in this sense of intermedia, you know, where things are not quite one thing or another thing, they're a third thing.
Uh-huh.
I think that's an interesting area to be working.
Especially now, because people want to experience something.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And this book, the print and book fair, sounds like something we've got to really get in on here. And you've got a new venue this year.
Yeah, this year we're at the Aloha Tower Marketplace. In past years, we were at the museum, which, you know, it's just a cool environment down there, down by the harbor with cruise ships and you know,
Wait a minute, let me really zero in on where this is going to be. I'm looking at Aloha Tower. On the right is the cruise ship,
loading
area.
Right, yeah, we won't be there. We'll be in the marketplace
area.
Yeah, but, you know, I think there's a nice vibe down there.
There is.
We're pretty excited about this new venue.
Okay, so I just go to Aloha Tower. What was there? Where?
you go to Aloha Tower. It's in a space called Multipurpose Room 3, which doesn't sound super exciting, but it's right in that central walkway at the Aloha Tower Marketplace, right on the way down to Gordon Biersch, if that, I'm not supposed to say that, but if that makes sense.
Sure. And we know where Aloha Tower is. We know where we can park all over town as well as, okay, there's a parking space there.
Yes.
We're going to that room 3.
Mm-hmm.
What am I going to find there? Because it's not just prints anymore. You've got
It's
kind of the expanded world of prints. So it's, you know, it's prints on paper, but it's also what I like to think of as print-based multiples. So that could be print brought to bear on all kinds of materials. And it could be books and zines and comics.
Tote bags?
Tote bags, all kinds of, you know, T-shirts and basically things that artists produce that are printed on. That's sort of the gamut that you will find there.
And the visual styles of the people you have coming in are so fantastic. You've got everything from manga, you've got Brady Evans there, his people, you've got the etchers. I mean,
yeah, so there'll be traditional printmakers, less traditional folks as well. There'll be some DIY publishers.
Yay!
There's a new magazine called Tropic.
Tropic!
Tropic Zine, they'll be there as well. And let's see.
You'll have music.
We'll have music.
Aloha Got Soul.
Aloha Got Soul is curating the lineup of DJs throughout the weekend. So,
and it opens on First Friday.
Friday,
you guys got
November
it going
2nd.
Now.
Yeah. So 5 to 9 on Friday and then 10 to 6 on Saturday.
On
the
Saturday.
3rd. Yeah.
You know, book fairs are the big thing happening across the country, internationally, right?
I see that from afar. And Nat actually has quite a bit of experience with the kind of art fair, book fair, print fair scene. So that's kind of why we brought him out, because he's sort of from that world. So.
And we've got the scene ourselves now.
Yes.
Thanks so much for coming in, Duncan, and you as well, Nat. Looking forward to seeing you at the Atherton this Sunday. You're going to be performing. And the 2018 Honolulu Print and Book Fair runs November 2nd and 3rd there in their new venue at Aloha Tower. Again, Nat Russell's going to be here at the Atherton this Sunday.
We don't stay away too long, only to sing the love song. We don't walk above the street, float 2 feet below.
Today's was a toughie, huh? Earlier in the show, we told you about a famous Greek businessman who made it big in Hawaii. 1877, George Lycurgus left his homeland near Sparta, sailed to New York City, and worked his way across the continent, eventually ending up in San Francisco. Family connections enabled him to start one of his first ventures, and that was shipping. I tell you, these people had guts. California produce and wine he shipped to his cousin in Honolulu. He eventually bought and named the Sanssouci Beach Resort in Waikiki. He bought and managed the Volcano House for a while. And for today's quiz, we asked you to name the pineapple packing and shipping company he helped found in 1892. It's the Pearl City Fruit Company. And the Smithsonian's got a fruit crate with that name on it, believe it or not. That is today's quiz. If you've got one you'd like to share, we'd love to hear about it. You can send it to talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. The 50th statewide Hawaii Craftsman Juried Exhibition opened last night in the main. Was it last night? Gosh, this week's crazy. At Linakona, it opened this week, and it's dedicated this year to Honolulu's beloved sculptor and teacher, the late Fred Roster. There's a small grouping of his work there at the entrance to the exhibit, but it's really nothing like the fabulous array of things in his own home. Fred's wife, Lynette, invited us to visit their private hideaway full of handmade objects up there in Ainakoa. And I started by asking Lynette, really, what was Fred like?
Do you know him?
Yeah, but
most people know him but don't know him. I mean, Fred was a nice guy, but he was introverted. I mean, that's why he worked so hard. I mean, he was dyslexic. How many people know him as dyslexic, right? You know, he struggled in school, but thank God he found art. You know, and he had a real gift for language, that's true.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
but you know, he was always making stuff, right? Always. He had hundreds of ideas. He was a worrier. Most people don't know that. His dad was a worrier, you know. They get anxious. They have anxiety. And there's nothing you can do to change that. You look at him, you know, this tall, 6 foot, what, two guy, you know, very athletic. But at the same time, so soft and gentle inside.
Where do you think his story starts?
Where? Oh, definitely at home with his family. Yeah, definitely.
His mom and dad,
yeah,
very close.
Very close family.
Brothers, sisters.
Yeah, two older sisters, two younger brothers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and all they had was each other, you know, and the boys were so competitive. And the girls were doing something else in the house, but the boys were always together outside. And they had so much freedom. The parents were always working on the egg farm. So, of course, they had chores. But lots of times the boys would just head off and go fishing. They had a lot of, they could explore safely back then. You know, just take their bikes and fishing poles and be out in nature all day long. Yeah, they grew up in Northern California, Palo Alto area, back when it was still lots of farms.
Mm-hmm. Has he always been an artist?
Oh, you mean, I think he didn't find art until junior college is when he took his first ceramics class. You know, back in high school, he thought he was going to be a pastor. Yeah, nobody knows that about Fred. Did you ever see any of his writing?
Really?
Yeah, I have a whole folder of writings that I see.
What kinds of things did he say?
You know, it was all very reflective. But as in his art, his writing was just spectacular. It got you, you know, it just nailed you right here in some storytelling way.
Did you think he was trying to say anything with the work?
Oh yeah, he had so much. He was upset so much with mankind for polluting this earth, you know, polluting the water, making a mess of things. Yeah, he always made a statement in his work. I mean, monkey with a gun sitting on top, right?
You two have been together since the 90s, right?
Well, we got married in 1996. So the show actually opening tonight, it's a different kind of exhibit because mm-hmm. I'm showing pieces that Fred made for me and gave me over the years. You know, some are little objects. I mean, my wedding rings, I had like 5 bands.
Oh.
You know, they're all so filled with memories. So why would I share it? I think it's a cathartic for me. I mean, Fred made it. And you know, anything Fred makes, even to the point of how it's mounted, it's gonna be hidden. And even the shelf, it's so tricky. You know, you can't see how it's mounted because there's no, you know, nothing showing, right? Specially carved.
Did he have any favorite pieces?
Oh, well, the favorite one is in the show. It's the plant manager's life. I think his favorite piece was his office. You know, his office shelves. I mean, that blew everybody's mind. You know, everybody wanted to just hang out there and look, and pick up and touch, right?
So many people know Fred. But,
yeah.
But don't really, have never really known him as you do, Lynette. You're...
Well, even I didn't really know him.
Lynette, thank you so much. Oh, we do know he loved Bella, his dog, his muse. And I know that after being in his house, after being in Fred's house, being around things made so lovingly by hand leaves an indelible impression. It does. And that's part of what's great at the Hawaii Craftsman Show. I mean, we're talking about handmade things here. Isabella Hughes, co-founder of the Honolulu Biennial, was this year's juror. And I asked her for her reflections on the pieces she saw.
A lot of the works this time, very reflective of, I think, the very specific and charged moment we are in time as a country and around the world, very political. They either had strong political overtones or these delicate undertones that were quite apparent. Another theme that I saw emerge was this move back to nature, whether it was through shape, form, material, really natural themes and aesthetics. But the thing I was looking for most, and to me what made strong work, was when there was a strong nod to history. You know, whether there was a specific method being used. I also was looking at how materials that have such a long history and craftsmanship are being recontextualized with something innovative and unexpected.
That was the Hawaii Craftsman Show juror, Isabella Hughes, who said one thing she loves about Hawaii Craftsmen is they fly the juror to each island to do the jurying. They're not judged from slides, and that makes a huge difference in craft work, as you know. The 51st Annual Hawaii Craftsman Statewide Juried Exhibition is going on through November 11th at the Honolulu Museum of Art School's Main Gallery.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, whose contributors help Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk show programming. Mahalo to the St. Andrew Schools, which includes the Priory School for Girls, the Prep for Boys, and Queen Emma Preschool.
That's it for this week. Coming up next week, October 30th, is the 80th anniversary of the original radio broadcast of War of the Worlds. And we'll talk with UH's Theater and Dance Association, which has secured the rights to perform it live. And if you've ever wondered about the music you hear on this show, you can find the playlist on our page at the hawaiipublicradio.org website. And that's also where you can listen back to today's show. The program is produced by Lillian Song, Ryan Finnerty, and Amber Khan Grusby. Backyard Quiz theme written by John DeMello. I'm Noe Tanigawa. Join us Monday to pick up the conversation.